Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone. This is Bonnie Kay, and welcome to the Straight Wives Talk Show. This is a hard-hitting show that discusses the complexity of marriages between straight women to gay men. Each week, my guests and I discuss issues that affect over 4 million women in this country and millions more around the world who find themselves unknowingly married to a gay or bisexual man. First, I'd like to wish everybody a very happy Valentine's week. I know this will be a difficult week for many of us who are in this situation, because it really kind of ties in with the holiday of love, and many of our women who listen to this broadcast and who are part of our support network are really suffering through this time. So know that support is available. You just have to write to me at bondk@aol.com, and I'll be happy to set you up with support. I want to also mention that the time is flying by before we have our healing weekend at the end of April. Here in Philadelphia, it's a very life-changing weekend for anyone who attends one or re-attends one, because sometimes you just need that extra push, or you need to reunite with friends who are progressing at different rates, but we're all getting to the finish line. So if you're interested in joining me here at the Philadelphia Healing Weekend, it's in Philadelphia this year, please write to me at bondkay@aol.com. That's bondkaye@aol.com. So tonight, I'm so excited because I have one of my very favorite, not only guests, but authors of all times, Dr. Margalis Felstad, who's here returning to visit us. Margalis, thank you so much for coming back.
Well, Bonnie, thank you so much for inviting me. I'm happy to be here.
I know that so many of our women truly benefit from your wonderful book, Stop Caretaking the Borderliner Narcissist and How to Get Out of the Drama and Get On with Life. And this first came to my attention through one of our members who had spoken with you and had told me you must read this book because this book changed her life. She was really stuck in her relationship with her gay husband, and after reading this book, she said everything became perfectly clear. And I said, anybody who could influence a person that much must be spectacular. And of course, after reading your book, I understood why she felt that way. But your book is just an amazing book, and you are a family therapist, and you've been practicing therapy for a long time, and you now do phone consultations. So for women who are looking for that help, Dr. Enfeld says available, you know, for consultation. But this is a topic that is so important to so many people on so many levels. So I'm going to start from the very beginning of the caretaking, and then we'll move on to the borderline and the narcissist.
That sounds good.
Most of our women, in some way or another, are caretakers. And I'm not sure whether people, this is nurture versus nature, just like, you know, different disorders are nurture versus nature. I think that some of this comes about through our upbringing, being a caretaker. Some of it comes from self-esteem issues. So maybe you could give people an idea of where this whole personality comes about.
Well, caretakers, as you said, are both born and they learn the role of caretaking as well. I think most of the caretakers I talk to are just naturally very empathetic, easygoing, agreeable, flexible people. They look for the good in others. They enjoy pleasing other people. They're very generous. They give the other person the benefit of the doubt. Unfortunately, this also can make them very vulnerable to being manipulated or being controlled by someone else. A lot of times people who are caretakers have had someone in their family that needed caretaking, often a parent or a sibling, and they learn a role of being hypervigilant, being aware of the other person's needs, always giving in, especially if their parent was a narcissist or a borderline or a rageaholic, an alcoholic. Those tend to train, those situations tend to train the children to be caretakers. And then, you know, as we grow up and become adults, we have that role, and it's a very pleasant role, and people like us because of it. And it can make us vulnerable to, as I said, being taken advantage of.
Do you feel that as women, we're more socialized from the time we're born to be caretakers?
Oh, absolutely.
Maybe there's still that role that women are expected to be taking care of the family, that this is
definitely
just how society has views you?
Yes. It's, you know, we have lots of research that show that little girls, 3, 4, 5 years old, are already caretaking their parents and being agreeable when they don't feel like it and giving in, and it's part of the natural ability of a lot of women, but it's also very much part of our culture that nice girls should be what you become rather than selfish or oriented towards your own needs.
And I think that it's really true that we're told that if we do things the right way that we'll be loved, and I think that's one of the very strong human needs, is to feel that sense of love from people. And by caretaking and doing, making somebody feel comfortable or happy, we get that message that this is the way we have to treat people if we want to be loved. Do you think that's part of it too?
Oh, of course. Of course. And we're told very directly, you know, if it's your fault that I'm not happy, and so you should do this or you should do that to make things work better. And even women's magazines and a lot of women's shows imply that if you aren't caring and giving and thoughtful of the other person, that you're going to be abandoned or unloved.
And I think that's a key component to it, is that everybody wants to be loved, but it's who we seek out, or who seeks us out, shall I say, when people know that we are caregivers, because we open ourselves up for predators who are out there. And aside from the whole issue of us having gay husbands, which is a totally separate issue, a lot of our women have to go out there again when their marriages are over. And I always tell them that you are vulnerable, that men who are predators are going to be looking for you, because if you're a caretaker, always looking to please somebody before you please yourself, that men can spot that right away, and they know how to pounce. Would you agree with that?
Oh, absolutely. I think caretakers are often very much sought out by people who are selfish, self-centered, controlling, people who want to control someone. And if, when you're very agreeable and give in and give up your own needs and wants to please them, then they know that they can take advantage of you.
And I think what people need to understand also, or women need to understand, is that when you first meet somebody, they're not going to necessarily display that kind of a personality. These guys are very charming. They know how to endear themselves to you and how to get you to want them. So it's not like they start out coming to your door, knock, knock, here I am to control you, right?
Oh, absolutely. They're usually very charming, and they promise you the world, and they tell you how great you're going to be with them. They create a picture that is so attractive, and they often sweep you off your feet, because the faster they can get you committed and connected, then the more control they're going to have.
In your book, you talk about the difference between caretaking and codependency. Could you address that a little bit?
Well, a lot of the caretaking clients that I've talked to over the years really were only caretakers in their primary love relationship. Oftentimes in the rest of their life at work and with friendships, with their general interactions, they were pretty independent. They would speak their mind. They had a good ability to say yes and no and to make choices. But somehow in their growing up and their experiences in love relationships, they are much more passive. They give in. They feel more vulnerable. And so they're willing to give up their own needs and wants in order to be loved and cared for. Whereas a codependent person is codependent across the board. They're codependent at work, in relationships, with whatever interactions they're having, they are in that caretaker role. So that's one of the things that I've noticed over the years. A lot of the caretakers that get involved with manipulators oftentimes are very independent in other areas of their life.
That's really interesting. So there's not necessarily a direct relationship there.
It's kind of a continuum.
Super
independent women often don't get involved in these relationships, but as they become a little bit more and more focused on the other person, they become more vulnerable. Some are extremely vulnerable, others are only slightly vulnerable.
So if you had to sit and explain to people who are not really familiar with psychological terminology, just to be really clear, can you give a good definition of somebody who's a narcissist to start with?
Well, the qualities that we look for in determining narcissism, and I'm really talking about narcissism personality disorder. Everyone is a little bit narcissistic. We have a sense of self-preservation. But what we're talking about is someone who is totally self-involved, where they may appear to be interested in you, but it's often so that they can turn the conversation around to talk about themselves. So they have a high need for your attention and validation. They tend to be very superior. They're better than everyone else. And because they're better when they're in the dating situation, they often tell you that you're better as well, that you are so fabulous because they have chosen you. However, narcissists really have an emotional split. They appear to be very in charge of themselves. They're superior. They're perfectionistic. They're better at everything. They know everything. And yet on the inside, deep down, they're often very self-loathing. They need attention because they don't believe they're worthwhile. They need constant praise and endearment because internally they really are not feeling good about themselves. And that's something that we often don't see until we get committed into the relationship with a narcissist. And then their need to control and to dominate and have everything their own way is the way they try and protect themselves and keep their anxiety and fear down. And I would think that's very true, especially with a lot of the gay men who come across pretending to be straight. Internally, they're very afraid of being found out.
Very much so. And maybe you can now give a little definition of a borderline personality. And how that's different than a narcissist.
Yeah, the borderline personality is basically an emotionally unregulated person, a person who, whatever they're feeling, that emotion comes out instantly and very strongly. They have extreme emotional reactions to very mundane, small problems. Narcissists have a borderline quality that's hidden underneath. Borderlines have it out in the open. And many fewer women marry men who are borderlines because they are too volatile right from the start, whereas with a narcissist, they seem smooth and charming and interesting and intelligent, and you don't know that that underlying seething anger is under there, whereas the borderline is out right in your face right from the beginning.
But they obviously find people to, you know, have as partners, right?
They do.
So they must...
Most of the time, according to the statistics that we've got so far, is that more women get diagnosed with borderline disorder. And that may be partly because women in general express their feelings more. But, you know, I don't think we have really good research on how many narcissists and borderlines there are in the world.
That's a good point. But it seems like we find out we have a lot of them, people married to them in our group. But
I've heard that.
To either of these behaviors, if we go back to nature versus nurture, what's your feeling on this?
Well, the psychology diagnosis manual indicates that both narcissism and borderline is about 50% inherited.
Uh-huh.
And that means that there is another one or more family members in that person's background who also has the disorder. However, you know, 50% doesn't make a whole. So the other half is experiences that people have had as they've grown up in the way they've been parented, and traumas or challenges that they faced along the way.
So let me ask you this
50-50.
Question. If it's 50-50, if you have someone who has that, you know, tendency because of genetics, would you add in learned behavior as another possible reason why it develops more so if you're coming from a parent who's like that?
Absolutely. You have a narcissistic parent, and then the child has that tendency, the parent is going to be reinforcing those behaviors throughout their life. So then they get, in essence, a double dose. And if you're inheriting 50% chance of getting narcissism, that means that at least one of your parents or a grandparent has that disorder. So it's going to be part of the family dynamic as the person is growing up.
Do you think that in cases narcissists attract each other, or are they just going for the caretakers?
Sometimes they will attract each other because they're both charming and dynamic. But typically those relationships don't last very long because they each want the other one's total attention. And then they're kind of at cross purposes. So they do tend to pick people who are caretakers. And those relationships with caretakers tend to last a lot longer. Because the caretaker makes sure it does.
You have someone that you're married to. And I'm not just talking about a gay husband, because then you go into your next relationship. Realistically, can these people change?
Can narcissists change?
Yes.
People ask me that all the time, but I don't have a really good answer. My experience and the experience of many, many therapists I've talked to is that basically you can't count on there being any change. You've got the genetic component, the propensity to be self-oriented and self-needy, and then you've got a lifetime of reinforcement of that behavior. So by the time you get married in your 20s, 30s, a pattern is well set. If you're 10 or 15 years down the line in a relationship, you've now reinforced that person another 10 or 15 years, and so their likelihood of wanting to change is so low. Most narcissists are not willing to even go to therapy because they think therapists are stupid and they don't want to change. They get what they want, so why would they change?
And I guess a borderline personality is even worse because there is no reasoning.
Yes, there's no ability to reason. The minute their emotions get triggered, they really are not in control of those emotions any longer, and they really can't stop their behavior.
Now, how is this different than, let's say, passive-aggressive behavior?
Well, narcissists can be passive-aggressive. Passive-aggressive people are afraid to say what they want, and so they kind of manipulate to get it, and certainly narcissists do that. But that's only one component of a narcissist.
Do people realize they're being manipulated when they're with a narcissist?
Well, often at first they're not aware because the narcissist makes them feel really good. They shower them with compliments and tell them how wonderful they are and how essential the caretaker is to their life, and that's actually very true. But as soon as the commitment is made, because narcissists both are very needy of attention and relationship, but they can't tolerate sharing. And they need everything to come to them, and they have very little to give to the other person. So then the relationship becomes very one-sided.
One of the things that you have in a recent newsletter, which I thought was so excellent that I shared with, you know, some of our women, it's a few months ago, but in one of your newsletters you talk about questions and answers about narcissists, and you say here, how can you tell if someone has a narcissistic personality disorder, not just being self-centered? And just like you were saying, that everyone has some level of it, but that doesn't mean you have a narcissistic personality just because you want to have a survival mechanism to help you feel better or feel that you have some sense of identity.
Go ahead.
No, I was going to say that one of the traits that you bring out is about the low levels of empathy.
Right. That's the real key, is that narcissists really can't figure out or understand how anyone else feels.
They can't, but I think they can give some kind of what I call false sympathy to make you think that they can. So
yes,
it's kind of like when you have a conversation, right?
Yes, they know the words to say. They know even kind of facial expressions to put on. But most of the couples that I worked with where there was a narcissist, the other partner says, you know, you're saying these things that you understand and you care, but I can't feel it. And they cannot actually convey the feeling of caring because they don't know. They really, narcissists cannot understand how other people feel.
And I think this is a major problem, that they don't have that ability to have those feelings. They can say, I love you. They can say, I'm sorry that you're feeling like this. But this is what our women complain the most about. There's not an emotional connection. So you can talk the words, but you're not really feeling what the person's telling you. And you make no attempt to make it any different because you don't see what the problem is. Would you say that's pretty much on target?
Yeah. That's exactly on target. They don't see what the problem is because empathy requires you to be able to put yourself in the position of another person and understand that feeling and even maybe share that feeling a little bit. And narcissists actually cannot do that. They can pretend to do that and they can learn to fake it. But they can't actually feel it. And that's what their loved one, their partner, feels, that vacuum, because they know it's not coming across.
Exactly. And one of the things you say also with a narcissist, and I think a lot of our women face this on a daily basis, is the fact of the constant blame, that they're told they're responsible and they're blamed for the problems in the marriages that really have nothing to do with them or the marriage, is they're living in a world that's a lie. So there's no way for them to think rationally in an irrational situation where they don't know what they're even thinking about. But the husbands, rather than take responsibility, will tell them, well, I'm happy in the marriage. You're the one who has the problem. Or they'll try what I call gaylighting them, you know, gaslighting if you're not gay, gaylighting men who are. And even as the women come and they see porno on the computer, the husbands will say, it's a pop-up, or you're crazy, or they'll blame their kids, or anything but take responsibility. But I think when you're constantly blamed for something, that you start internalizing it, and you start really doubting yourself. Do you find that with women?
Yes.
Who are caretakers.
And the more you're told something that's not true, the more likely you are eventually to believe it. And caretakers have a tendency to feel overly responsible anyway. And so when you add blame to the mix, caretakers are much more likely to believe that blaming and to try very hard to do something to fix it, to make it better.
And I think this is one of the things I tell our women, that almost half the country gets divorced without a gay husband, you know, just because they're not happy in a marriage. But with our women, they're always internalizing that they're doing something wrong because their husbands are telling them, well, you're the one with the problem, not me. And so they even fall deeper into this, you know, situation of feeling immobilized to leave or feeling paralyzed that, you know, they're doing something wrong because their husbands are happy, but they're not happy. Maybe they want too much. You know, and they really are very confused, but it's really easy when you live with somebody on a day-by-day basis to really make them lose faith in themselves. So you mentioned that there's really very little hope as far as getting these, you know, partners to change. So what is the likelihood, okay, now, of the caretaker changing? You have a better chance for that, right?
Oh, definitely. And that's why I wrote the book. Is that caretakers have an immense ability to change. And sometimes that's almost to their disadvantage because they change themselves to try and fit what their partner wants, only to find that it never, ever works. But, caretakers are very open to looking at themselves, of understanding the feelings of other people, of learning to set boundaries, of learning to create a stronger self-esteem so that they can take charge of their lives.
Do you find that women in this situation often come from households where there were behaviors like this from parents? In other words, it came from dysfunctional types of families, and they walk into something else that's dysfunctional, but they don't even realize it because it's one dysfunction to the next.
Well, yes. Actually, they come from two ends of the spectrum oftentimes. They have a dysfunctional parent or sibling that they've had to sort of caretake to make things. They were often the peacemaker in their family. But they can also come from families in which there was really everybody was super healthy. And so they're sort of blindsided by this kind of crazy interaction. And they just think, well, if I just explain and use rational and make these adjustments, we'll get along and things will work. So it could be either one.
So what are some of the steps for a woman who's in a situation where she really feels that she's not moving? What are some of the things that she can do to start trusting herself again? What are some of the things that you suggest?
Well, the first thing I always suggest is start, seeing your situation as rationally as possible. You're not going to be able to get the other person necessarily to see it, but you need to start trusting your own judgment. So checking in with family, with friends, with a therapist, being in a support group, those situations that give you feedback about who you are that's separate from this functional person who has a skewed view of everything. And as you do that, making your own choices and deciding what you want to do with your life. If you're not happy in your relationship, identifying what you're not happy about and getting it somehow, somewhere. if you aren't getting enough attention or enough feedback or enough support, find that through friends and your own personal activities.
A lot of women feel very stuck in these marriages because when you're living with somebody who's controlling or narcissistic or has a borderline personality or who's a rageaholic, it's so easy to get lost in the midst of that. And I tell women, it doesn't happen overnight. You have to have a game plan. Nobody's pushing you out the door, but you have to have a solid game plan. And that's where having a therapist can really come in and be so valuable. And that's something that you help people with, right?
Oh, absolutely. In fact, the book that I've recently written and is coming out in a couple months called Healing from a Narcissistic Relationship goes step by step about the things that you can do to rebuild your self-confidence, create more sense of self-love, and empower yourself to move forward in your life.
And I'm so excited about that book, and I'll be announcing it to the group as soon as it comes out, and hopefully you'll come back when it comes out so we can promote it and go through that also. One of the things I thought was very interesting in your current book that I love, and I always use it as a guideline, you talk about non-caretakers. And I think women need to hear this, that a true non-caretaker rarely gets caught in the drama games of a borderline personality or narcissistic personality. Non-caretakers do not feel the need to protect, save, feel sorry for, or understand the borderline. They do not feel an extra special, dazzled, or even interested in the over-the-top attention and self-importance that the narcissist displays. Instead, non-caretakers see the BPNP as a strange, odd, and annoying. The non-caretaker's typical reaction is to move away from the interacting with the BPNP because they usually give and take, and the normal boundaries of a healthy relationship are constantly being breached. This is very uncomfortable and irritating for a non-caretaker who picks up very quickly that the interaction is not relaxed, comfortable, or rewarding. When non-caretakers find themselves in frequent contact with a BPNP, they will usually try to ignore it and limit their contact as much as possible. And I think that this is really an important thing for women to understand. It's not that you're selfish. It's a matter of, you know, self-survival, not to look to get into these drama-driven relationships. And I think that many of us, you know, when we're younger especially, but some people as they get older, always feel like we can save these people. Like if we show them enough love and we show them unconditional love, then they can change. Then they can love us back the same way that we love them. And this is a need that I see a lot of women, they have. They really think they can change these guys. And I always say it's a shame that when we're younger, we're always looking for that, you know, edgy guy or the bad boy who we can reform. I know, I think it's part of growing up, but some people just never get past it. They're always looking for it with the drama and the trauma attached to it. And I don't think people find that kind of happiness in relationships, and that's why I thought it was so important that you've talked about non-caretakers, that they're not looking for those kind of relationships, and I think that has to be our goal. We don't have to be caretakers forever, right?
Correct. And being a caretaker is not about loving. It's about control and power and dominance and subservience and giving in. If you want a relationship that's truly loving and empathetic and caring, and you know you can do that, it makes perfect sense to find someone else who does it as well, because you deserve to get what you are able to give. Marriage is not therapy. And when you're trying to save somebody, you're trying to be a therapist. Marriage is about a partnership of going forward in life with a person who's the most fun and most enjoyable person that you can find. And that sense of support and fully being heard and seen is not something you can ever get from a narcissist, no matter what you do, because they are not capable of doing that, ever.
It's a momentary high if they throw you the crumb, and it's a very small crumb that they're throwing at you, but because you've learned to have such low expectations in these relationships, whatever kind word they may give you, somehow in your head you're thinking, well, I got one kind word. I know if I work harder at it, he'll see that he's wrong, or he'll see it my way. And women have this tremendous need to try to change men who can't be changed. And I have found this through all the years, I mean, especially with women with gay husbands who keep thinking, if I try harder, they won't be thinking about that anymore. If I try, you know, if I do things better, then they won't want to think about those other things. But you just can't change what people are. You can't change your sexuality. You can't change your mental disorders or any combinations of them. It just doesn't happen. And I think that you as a therapist have seen this throughout the years, correct?
Oh, absolutely. You're absolutely correct. You cannot change another person. And you want to be very careful and aware what you decide to work on changing in yourself. If you're changing yourself to please someone else, the question is why? Why aren't you good enough the way you are? You need, everyone deserves to have someone in their life who loves them for the way they are right this minute. You're good enough.
Mm-hmm. And it doesn't matter, you know, how old you are, what you look like, what your weight is. There are loving, kind people out there. And one of the members of our network, Janine Finelli, you know, who's a health coach, one of the things that impressed me so much about her is that she has both of her wrists tattooed in very beautiful calligraphy, but it says, love is kind. And I think it puts the whole perspective on what love should be like. Because so many of us who are in these chaotic, ridiculous relationships don't realize that this is not what love is. Love should be kind, right?
Absolutely. For years, I was working on my own caretaking behavior, I wore a bracelet. And on the bracelet, it said, to thine own self be true. And it was a continual reminder that who I am, what I enjoy, how I interact, the qualities of who I am are all good enough, and I need to stand with those. And people who enjoy those about me, those are the people I need in my life. And the people who don't like those things, they shouldn't be in my life.
Exactly. You don't have to win people over and try to impress them by being somebody who you're not. One of the things you mentioned also in your book, because I've talked about this on other shows, is I never knew about this as a disorder, but I learned that from Dr. Phil, where he said that there are some people who are just addicted to chaos. And you have in your book about chaos is perfectly normal denial, that chaos is in the constant. Is a constant in the relationship dominated by the BPNP, because BPNP reacts strongly and emotionally to every minor mishaps, misunderstandings, or disappointments. There's always some emotionally charged event happening. That is why denial is used so much by the BPNP families. The fastest way to get out of chaos, especially when normal problem solving is not an option, is to forget about what just happened and move on as quickly as possible. Denial is a defense mechanism that even young children can use. And I think that, you know, chaos is another quality is another characteristic of somebody who has a narcissistic personality, that they create chaos.
Yeah.
Would you say that's true?
They create chaos. They live in chaos. And they're in chaos because what they feel and who they are inside is very different than how they present themselves outside. So they're always going to be giving you double messages. And when you get these two messages, an emotional message that contradicts the verbal message or the presentation of the person on the outside is always going to feel chaotic. And I think that's a red flag. When you feel chaos around a person, that's a red flag to get away. If you want a peaceful, calm, loving, accepting life, the minute you aren't feeling that, you should be looking at what's going on. You should be surrounding yourself with people who are already doing what you're interested in having in your life. And if you don't like chaos, and quite honestly, most caretakers don't really like chaos, but they seem to get fairly easily hooked into it because they're trying to fix it. The caretaker sees chaos and they go and try and take care of it. Whereas a non-caretaker is going to see chaos and they just walk away.
Exactly. And that's what we have to aim for. One of the things you write about in your book that I find also so interesting, you say caretakers have pretty well-defined sense of self. That's called SOS, sense of self. Before getting into this relationship, you probably knew a lot about yourself and acted consistently. You knew your strengths and weaknesses. Your values and morals were established. You saw yourself pretty much the same way your friends and family described you. Usually, you have been described as a caring, conscientious, friendly, considerate, and giving. You may not be so sure of who you are after being in a long-term relationship with the BPNP. The BPNP's description of you can vary wildly, but more often than not, he or she sees you as selfish, thoughtless, mean, and wrong. These are two very different pictures of you from family and friends versus the BPNP become very confusing. Caretakers like to be good people. You especially like to please the person you love and find it easy to believe their complaints about you. If the BPNP says that you're selfish, you will probably try your hardest to be giving, kind, and even overly considerate to change their opinion of you to match what you believe about yourself. If the BPNP says that you are mean, you will more likely give in to whatever he or she wants in order to show that you are caring. You begin to exaggerate your kindly behaviors at the same time that you start doubting your perceptions of who you are. However, this giving in and giving up only seems to reinforce the accusations from the BPNP and increases your own self-doubts. Your SOS becomes more fragile around the BPNP, and you may often feel a need to try to get him to see you more as you see yourself. However, the emotional and logical distortions of him can lead to a skewed picture of who you are, and that isn't likely to change. And I think that was just so beautifully written because so many of us are going through that. We go into this having some sense of who we are. But when you're living with someone who's constantly knocking you or making you feel bad about yourself, you really do lose yourself, and it doesn't take a lot of time. Would you agree with that?
Yes, that's very true. In fact, I really recommend that if you're around anyone who gives you a picture of yourself that doesn't seem true, that puts you down, that blames you or criticizes you, that's not an interaction you want to be involved with. They are doing that to get something from you. It's a manipulation tactic to get what they want and to make you feel vulnerable and needy so you'll stay with them.
Exactly. Exactly. And what I love about your book also is that at the end of the book, which I found extremely helpful because I do know I am a caretaker, but I'm trying to really work on it before I die. I'm getting very old now, and I'm still a caretaker. But okay, I'm a caretaker test. And it's so interesting that some of these questions on here, and then you give an analysis, but for instance, you have from 1 to 5, I find it hard to say no to my partner. I often do not know what I want. I frequently find myself angry or upset after talking to my partner. Even when I tell my partner no, I find myself doing what he or she wants anyway. I find that I've given up friendships to please my partner. I think a lot of our women would really fail this test very badly. but they would find themselves in one of these categories as being self-defeater. So it's really interesting.
Yeah.
If you take tests, you can really assess yourself and see where you're starting. So if you want to go for therapy, at least you have the starting grounds of what the problems are and, you know, what you're dealing with. So I think this assessment is really excellent. And also, can you talk a little bit about your monthly newsletter that I receive?
Oh, certainly. I send out a monthly email newsletter, and it has a couple of articles and sometimes recommendations about books and that kind of thing, but always talking about things that can strengthen or help caretakers become more aware and be prepared, tactics and strategies to use to protect your self-esteem and to set boundaries. And it's free, and anybody who's interested can just send me an email at margellistherapy.com or margellistherapy@gmail.com. Yeah.
I'm having my newsletter coming out this week. I know I'm a few weeks behind because I was sick last month. But, you know, it is coming out by Tuesday, and I'm going to put in there for anyone who reads this, you know, or is listening this week or next week, what the address is to get the free newsletter. I know I find them all so interesting and so informative, and Dr. Felsad's more than happy to send it to you. It really is very informational, and especially when you're going through getting ready to move on and going to recovery, you know, this is how to do it. And also her information's on there so that if you would like to do therapy by phone, you don't have to be in her neighborhood at all. You could be anywhere in the country. And you do phone therapy, correct?
Correct.
Yep, so you would be with the best of the best. Dr. Felsad also has her blog on Psychology Today. And she's really strongly recognized, you know, in this community of therapy as working with people, specializing in people who are caretakers and how to make you hopefully maybe want to, I don't know if I'll ever get to be a non-caretaker, but I can become a less than caretaker, right? Could
exactly.
That be a new category for you? A little less of a caretaker.
The test you mentioned in the back of the book kind of gives a summary of mild caretaking all the way to very severe caretaking, and I think it's a good way to kind of measure your progress as you go along.
I know the
basic qualities of people who are caretakers are just really kind, empathetic, wonderful qualities. But the dilemma is caretakers often don't value those qualities in themselves, and they don't see what an extraordinarily value they have. And so they give away their energy and their love and their caring to people who really aren't giving it back. And that's really the goal, is to share who you are, but protect yourself.
Redirect.
So
yeah, redirect it to people
that,
who deserve it.
Exactly. There are lots of people in the world who would absolutely love to have that kindness and energy, and would appreciate it. So, you know, give it where it's
appreciated. I think it comes down to setting boundaries. And one lesson I learned long ago when I was, you know, my counseling master's program, I had a wonderful teacher who was an assertiveness instructor also. But she said, in this world, there are two kinds of people, givers and takers. And the givers need the takers because, you know, they need somebody to give to, and the takers need the givers because they need somebody, you know, who will give to them. But if you don't have a balance, then you'll never have a relationship. You know, you can be a giver, but you have to be able to set your limits. The takers are always going to want to take, right?
That's right. And as a giver, you really have to be the judge of whether you're getting an equal amount of energy and caring and love back for what you're giving.
Mm-hmm. So, Dr. Fell said, when is your next book coming out?
I've been told that it should be out at the end of April or beginning of May. And
okay.
It's called Healing from a Narcissistic Relationship.
And I will tell you, that's something that 99% of the women who are part of our network need to do. So I know they'll be looking forward to that book coming out, and I will make an announcement, and Dr. Felsad will come back and join us. And I'll be getting that first copy. I'll be on that line on Amazon waiting for that book to come out. And I'm so excited that you're doing this because I know it'll be a major help for many of our women. So I would like to thank you so much for taking the time to share with our women, to be with me tonight. And it's always such a really learning experience from you. I mean, I always value what you have to say because I know that many of our women are caretakers and they need to understand that you don't have to be stuck in this role forever, that you cannot change the men that you are with. They're not going to love you anymore. They're not going to love you any better, and they're not going to love you any differently. Although I do talk about, you know, in my writing, something called the honeymoon revisited, where they'll do the honeymoon period for a few weeks to make you just think that it's going to be different. But then, boom,
yeah.
You're back where you started. And that's how it is. You know, it's constant ups and downs, but far more downs than ups. And you deserve better than this. You need to find a way to get out. And that's why you have therapists like Dr. Felsted who's there. And if you need support while you're going through it, drop me a line, or if you want to get in touch with Dr. Felsted, drop me a line, bondk@aol.com. So thank you so, so much for your time. I want to wish you a wonderful Valentine's Day because you exude love to everybody. That's part of this network by coming on here and helping us. So thank you so much for all of your time, Dr. Felsted.
Thank you, Bonnie. I really appreciate being here and all the work you do to get this message out to people.
Oh, thank you so much, and we'll be talking to you in a few months about your new great book coming out.
All right,
so I'm
great.
Say good night to you and say good night to our listeners, and have a wonderful week. If you need help or support during this hard week, just write me a note, and I'll be there caretaking. Well, but I have my borders now. But anyway, thank you so much, Dr. Felsted, and good night to everybody.
And do phone counseling with Dr. Felsted. You know, if you want to have a session with her, that's on her website as well. And some of you need to meet her in person. I mean, if you're blessed enough to be in the Fort Collins area, you can go and make an appointment in person. But if not, you certainly can do counseling through the telephone, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I do quite a bit of that since my books come out, and I can answer questions that way that are specific about individual situations and give you specific ideas of things to do.
And I don't say this right now because you are a guest on the show. I'm being 100% honest with you when I tell you that as soon as I bought your book, and I had a number of my friends, not related to this particular issue, but who really needed to read it, and I know that within a week at least 6 people bought this book. And when they bought it, you know, back in November after I got mine, I want to tell you that they just love this book. It's an easy to read. You're going to see yourself in almost every page. You're going to see your relationships.